by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. And, you know, we always check with Game and Fish to see what the latest and greatest is. Information that you need. And Janet, you have, and Janet, today is one of those days we're going to kind of go on a little bit of a rant, because there are people that try to do good. They try to be, friendly to the wildlife, but they're probably doing wrong things when they're being too friendly.
Absolutely. And you know, Brandon's here because he does have a message that is, you know, tough. Everybody always has such good intentions when they see those little fuzzy, cute creatures out there. But it always puts us in a really bad situation. And Brandon wants to talk a little bit about things that we can do to help us take care of that newborn wildlife.
Yeah. And the best thing that we can do is really nothing at all. I mean, if you see a young deer or young gosling out there, the best thing that you can do for it is just to leave it be. Even if you don't see mom around, there's a really good chance that she's close. But on the other hand, if it looks injured, that's a good time to call us. Now, don't grab it. Don't put it in a box, because there's some diseases going around that we don't want the public to come in contact with. But just let us know.
You know, Drew, the things that Brandon is talking about, there are so many things that we can do to help prevent this. Things like keeping your cat inside right now, things like keeping your dog on a leash, which are all things that we should be doing all the time anyway, because, you know, when the fantastic owl falls out of its nest, it doesn't fall out of its nest. It's trying to learn how to fly, and maybe it's not as fantastic yet, and it lands on the ground. And your dog, you know, might nuzzle it just a little bit too much. Or if it's like my dog and it's a bird dog and it likes to carry things around in its mouth, you know, those are things that can injure those newborn fledglings out there. And so we really want to keep our actions in check to help keep wildlife and those cute little fuzzy things going strong so that they can grow into fantastic wildlife for us to hunt, fish, and watch.
Brandon, so since all these babies are dropping now, and I know that it's a big part of you guys having to keep your eyes on things to further the research for season settings and the fawn numbers, because that all comes back into play when it comes to winter and spring for next year. What will happen if people keep coming in contact with these babies? And like, where do you intervene, and what do you have to do at that point?
I would say if people are getting too close to these young wildlife, like, there is a good chance that it could push the mother off in some situations. We really see that in birds as well. If you're getting too close to the young ones, sometimes the moms will abandon a nest more or less than like a young chick or anything like that. But overall, it just doesn't give that wildlife the fair chance that it needs, because it is a natural cycle that we see every year. We're in the springtime. There's young ones out there. The wildlife needs its space to really thrive.
So if a person does come in contact with a baby, you mentioned that mom could go away and not come back with it. What has to happen when mom disappears and you have to get involved with these babies?
Well, honestly, that rarely happens, because mom typically is somewhere there close. Now, there are some pretty rare situations like a vehicle strike or something like that where mom's gone, and that's a good time to call us, or if it's a parent injured animal.
So the thing that Drew, that Brandon is really avoiding here is to tell you that if your cat attacks a baby bunny and you bring it in, we have to kill it. There's not a chance for it to survive, unfortunately. If your dog happens to chase a fawn across, you know, a lawn, and it hurts its leg while it's chasing it, we have to kill that fawn. And so really it is an unfortunate time of year for us when those things happen. And so you know, keeping your distance and keeping your things in check are really helpful, not only for the wildlife, but for you as well. Again, the disease issue is real. We are still in the throes of highly pathogenic avian influenza, which is still impacting a lot of our avian friends out there. And so we want to make sure that people are, you know, taking care of themselves, being safe, and keeping your pets safe as well. There are incidences of this strain of avian influenza crossing species barriers into things like livestock. And so it's probably not too far of a jump to think that your dog or cat could get it as well. So let's just all stay safe out there and leave the wildlife babies alone.
Hey, Brandon, if I happen to stumble across a little tiny furry little cute little bunny and I know that mom got hit by a car, can I just take that bunny and raise it as my own?
You absolutely cannot. You need a Chapter 10 permit to possess live wildlife. So we do see that a lot with bunnies. We see it a lot with geese. So you are not allowed to do that.
That goes as far as the deer and antelope babies and all of that. That is off limits for pets.
100%. It's off limits.
Well, man, but it makes for some good Instagram. I'll admit to that, man. You can see some of those cutest things out there feeding everything with little bottles and saving them. Unfortunately, in the long run, it's not the way it happens. And so we just want to make sure everyone is safe out there.
And I really want to make the public know that if you are taking that wildlife, that you're taking away from that animal's chance to have a really good, prosperous life.
Everybody, like you mentioned earlier, has the good thoughts in their mind. They want to do what they think is best for these animals. And sometimes they probably get a little overzealous when it comes to what to do in a situation like this, Brandon.
Right. And I don't know how many calls I get. Well, a baby bird fell out of its nest. Well, that's an important part of the bird's life cycle. They have to leave the nest at some point. So just let the bird be.
Well, and it's hard. You know, we have struggles and difficulties sometimes when we have to put down or euthanize these young wildlife when people bring them into us. You know, we say this over and over again. We get into this job because we do love wildlife and not because we necessarily want to always be injuring it or putting it down. And so it is difficult for us as well, Drew. But like he said, when we see these things happening, it's hard, right? We live in Wyoming. The wind, or should say Casper, there are places in Wyoming where the wind doesn't blow and we all visit those often. But in Casper, when the wind blows, oftentimes that's when we do see the eggs fall out of the nest. We do see the baby birds falling out of the nest. And unfortunately, that is a part of the cycle. You know, what we can do, like we've mentioned a million times before, is if it happens to be a fledgling who maybe is just hopping around, put them, you know, not in the street. You can kind of shoo them up against the fence at the base of the tree. Mama will find them. You know, keeping your pets away, fantastic ideas. But just remembering that everybody always has good intentions with everything that they do. And we here at the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, it's not always going to be that we have to euthanize the animals. But we do want to be there to help take care of them and to help the public as well, right? Serving the public and helping their peace of mind and know what we can do. But unfortunately, right now with some of the diseases like HPAI, our rehab facilities are not taking injured birds because they're concerned about the birds that they already have that have tested negative that are in their facility getting rehabbed becoming positive. And so there's a lot of things out there that come into play with this, and we just want to continue to take care of Wyoming's wildlife to the best of our abilities.
Brandon, what would be a situation if you stumble upon, say, a fawn? Why would the mother leave that baby there and be non-existent at that point?
Yeah, a lot of times if you find a fawn, it's because the mother is out foraging. She found a safe place to go hide that fawn. She's off for the day. She knows right where it is. She's going to come back to it. It's a pretty common thing. Just stash the fawn for a little bit while she goes off and does her daily routine.
And a lot of times they do that for safety, too. Because, yeah, you know, if there's a predator around or a possibility of something getting that baby.
Yeah, for sure. If there's a predator around, she'll stash it up there. She cleans it really well to get the scent off of it, and then maybe tries to lead the predator away by moving off.
You know, and it's one of those really cool things that nature takes care of itself. And it has a time period, you know, usually kind of the, if you start looking the last week of May, first couple weeks of June, all of the big games start to drop their fawns or their calves. And that's to have all of this fantastic food for predator that predators like to eat on the ground at the same time. So maybe they only have 1 or 2 weeks that they can get out there to forage on fawns. And then everything can run faster than the coyote. And so it really is a neat tactic that that wildlife has come up with. So, you know, it is that period of time where you're going to see a lot of what you think are abandoned fawns, and really they're not. Now, if you do see one in the parking lot of the Beacon, which has happened before, give us a call. But it turns out Mama was just around the side of the Beacon eating. So, you know, those are the things that that we do definitely want to keep our mind on. But nature takes care of itself. It's pretty incredible.
It's a good reminder, too, that if you were to, like, pick up that fawn and take it home, that that is illegal. You're not allowed to have wildlife in your possession.
So, Brandon, let's recap just a little bit. When is a good time for people to call Game and Fish?
A good time to call is like if there's a fawn like on the side of a road or something like that in the Walmart parking lot, in the Beacon parking lot. Probably a good time to give us a call. If it something looks injured, a broken leg, or just something doesn't look right, it's a good time to call. A good time not to call would be you just found a fawn and it's laying in the bushes and you're hiking down Wolf Creek. You know, that's not at the time you probably need to call. So,
yeah, you're in their area at that point. You're where they live. It, if it's in your backyard, then maybe that's a different story. But if you're out and about and you come across a fawn or a baby, just leave it alone. And if you have questions, obviously, there's all kinds of information at wgfd.wild.gov. And if it comes to it and you need to call, give them a holler there at Game and Fish. And I know that this is one of those important things that we talk about every year that people sometimes forget and get a little excited. Anytime you see wildlife, it's fun. But when you see a baby, it can be a little overwhelming for people who think it's so cute and cuddly and they just want to help it.
For sure. And the best thing you can do for that animal is just give it space.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian, and this weekend is the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, round number 2, the Governor's Cup. And, Brian, we're going to recap everything next week, but I think it's going to be a pretty passionate weekend because, you know, there's a big prize up for grabs.
Yeah, I think, boy, you put me on the spot here, but I think that the first place prize to this weekend is $15,000 for first place.
Yeah, it's just outstanding that, that you know, folks come out, get to fish, have fun, win money.
Oh, and it's been a little party in the town of Glendale this weekend. You know, we are doing our rules meeting and our awards ceremony in town. At the Trading Post, Doc and Robin were kind enough to host us here, and we got a tent set up and tables and chairs. Last night we had a band that played here under the stars, and we had a really good time just listening to those guys. And there's a buzz going around town, like the bars and the restaurants, and everybody's you know just hanging out, just. Enjoying the nice weather and the nice weekend.
It's funny. Last week, I was talking to somebody that was on the water, not in the tournament, and he said, you know, the town of Glendale was like the circus was in town.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there were people everywhere hustling and bustling and walking up and down the streets, and it's good to see that in a town like Glendale.
Well, you know, these small communities, I mean, I think Glendale has 280 people population, you know, they kind of rely on these events, you know, and people passing through, and they did a fantastic job accommodating the anglers and taking care of anglers. And, you know, the anglers are there to support those that support them, you know, and so the Trading Post and Bellwood Boats and the Frontier restaurant and the bars, you know, they've all kind of kicked in and done something to help make the anglers feel welcome and accommodate them. And Doc's done a really nice job of, you know, giving us the opportunity to use his facility for this one. The last one was at Bellwood, and it was fantastic as well. To have the space and to be able to bring these anglers in, and for the anglers to be able to support the community and fuel sales and food sales and hotels and motels and Airbnbs and VRBOs and everything else that that they do, is pretty important to those communities. And we really appreciate the communities for, you know, stepping up and actually, you know, kicking in and helping our anglers.
And something I wish I'd invested in is the twice the ice type of ice machine.
Oh, we do love that little ice machine.
Swipe your card, get the ice, and you're down the road.
Yeah, any 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, it's the simple things in life, really. You know, one of the things that we've dealt with, and last week, Memorial Day weekend, you know, was a little bit rainy at times and a little chilly and windy. And then this week, a little bit different. So one thing that you have to do still, and we talk about it almost every week, it's prepare. So I've got my rain gear here. I've got the double sweats. You know, you got your light pants. And
well, we've done this for a lot of years, you know, and we usually start off with, you know, pair of shorts covered up with long rain gear pants and rain gear shirts and sweatshirts, and then by the end of the day we're down to a tank top and shorts, you know.
Just dying to jump in for a minute. Just a minute. But you know, one of the great parts about Rocky Mountain Discount Sports is you got all of those layers covered. You walk in the store and you got the sun shirts, you got the long sleeve into the heavier rain gear, the light rain gear, and then, you know, all the layers you'll need for that.
Yeah, I mean, the clothing-wise, you know, we've got a pretty good selection of all the fishing apparel. And then, you know, we're seeing a lot of people just out hiking, too. You know, we're seeing a lot of people purchasing bear spray. There's a handful of carrying some pistols, possibly. But bear spray and trekking poles have really kind of kicked off this last week, where people that are maybe heading up to the park, or they're hitting the bridle trail and just trying to get, you know, maybe some of those pounds off from, you know, the long winter.
Easing into it a little bit, yeah. And then, you know, my wife and I, we'd planned we're going to go and we're going to hit a lot of camping this year. Last year was kind of crazy, but, you know, you got everything from different types of, you know, if it's going to be cold, you got a little heavier tent, you got all the sleeping bags and all that too. So
yeah, we I mean, again, we kind of joke, you know, during COVID, you know, we had a lot of people that had never hit the outdoors before, and you know, they start at the front of the store with a shopping cart, and they got their phone out, and they says, what do I need to go camping? You know, and they're like, I need a lantern, I need a flashlight, I need a tent, I need a sleeping bag, I need a camp stove, I need a percolator or a kettle, or, you know, and we've got it all. I mean, you're going to find just about anything that you possibly could need, including freeze-dried meals. We've got a Mountain House. We've got Peak Refuel. And there's a lot of good options there. So if you don't really want to do a lot to prep, or don't have a lot to prep, you just bring a small camp stove with some water, heat it up, dump it in a bag, and you got yourself a meal.
Or for those that want to go the extra mile, you have the smokers and grills and the big Wild Gear coolers and Grizzly coolers.
Oh, yeah. And if you haven't seen the Wild Gear coolers, I mean, definitely come in and take a look at them. We've got a really good selection of coolers and, of course, all their tumblers and mugs. But the coolers that they've got are, you know, actually made right here in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. The Rotomold machine is here. They're employing people that work and live here in Casper. And the product is 100% over-engineered. It is the best cooler you'll ever see. I mean, the wheels on them are ball bearing wheels. I mean, they're not plastic bearings. They're the latches are solid. They're great. They've got dual well coolers. They've got single well coolers, and it will be a cooler that you only have to buy one time.
Right. You may get a little sticker shock at the beginning, but when you think, well, I'm going to keep this for 50 years or whatever, you know, down the line, it's well worth it.
Well, in the days of $50 coolers and foam coolers, is, you know, it's done.
Yeah,
like
right.
they just really don't exist. And you know, I think that's good probably for the environment in general. We're not, you know, disposing of, you know, cheap stuff and foam coolers you know, every summer or twice a summer.
Right.
You know, but yeah, we've got the quality gear. The Wild Gear is made here in Casper, a U.S. product. Grizzly coolers are also a U.S. made product. And then we carry Yetis and a handful of other different brands on tumblers and on coolers.
Just like Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, locally owned, locally operated, Wyoming owned. So, you know, keeping the love right here in the state.
And it's important to support, you know, not just us as a local business, but, you know, all these other vendors that are trying to employ people and keep a business going, because, you know, they're the ones that are employing our future kids, our right. kids. They're also the ones that are, you know, helping sponsor baseball teams and hockey teams and soccer fields and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I know we can't always take care of everybody's needs at one time, but you know, when you purchase it in town, you know, as opposed to the old Dr. Amazon there, you definitely are helping the community.
You know, and speaking of the community, you have a lot of Wyoming products that are here. You have whole shelves that are seasonings and vegetables and pickled items. And
yeah, Chugwater chili mix. We've got the Eggington's, you know, sauce that they use down there at their place. We've got some flour from a local mill that we just brought in that people are using for like fish batters and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So yeah, we try to definitely do as much local stuff as we can, and also just as much U.S. made stuff as we possibly can as well.
Well, get on in here and check them out. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, locally owned, locally operated, right here in Casper, Wyoming.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, and boy, we're almost to June, Memorial Day weekend, and I know a lot of people are sitting on the patio or porch this morning having coffee and getting ready for that adult beverage, because you don't got to work for tomorrow, most people, and we're thinking about what maybe we need to buy to get out and enjoy what we've got coming up with the summer, and we're still in the rain part of the year.
This is the Memorial Day weekend. Seems like it's always one of those wild cards where you know, it starts looking good, and then all of a sudden, you know, afternoon rain and thunderstorms and wind, and If you haven't got your rain gear, it's not over yet. So
I've seen predictions of snow in some parts of the state still. The high altitudes have been getting a lot of rain. As a matter of fact, the bighorns are almost 2 inches over the average for April and May. So it should end up being a pretty good time.
Well, it's really hard to complain about the moisture, because, you know, a lot of our reservoirs are, you know, under what they were last couple years, and you know, this rain's definitely making everything look nice and green. So, I mean, we need it. We want it. We just don't want it this weekend.
Yeah, right. A long weekend. A lot of folks going to the lake. Maybe they're going to head out camping. And like you just said, we always have those pop-up thunderstorms or a cold, drizzly rain. So rain gear really is pretty important.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't keep us from doing some of those activities that we like, you know, whether you're taking the side-by-sides out or, you know, trying to get on the lake for a little bit. Just kind of look ahead, watch that weather, especially the wind on those lakes. You know, we've had some pretty big wind days where, you know, it makes it a little more difficult getting on and off the boat ramps, even just letting a partner off the boat ramps. You know, sometimes it's a dive to the boat ramp and hope for the best. So, but be prepared and make sure you're especially layered up properly, have the right clothes with you, and the rain gear is definitely a big plus for the next few weeks.
Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial kickoff to summer. So
right.
School's about out, so the kids will be in their summer mode. And the grills will be breaking out this weekend, and a lot of people maybe are coming in to check out a Traeger for the first time, and you have a lot. I was out watching them and looking at them earlier, and there's a lot of selection.
Yeah, and there's a lot of really good new models. There's the Woodbridge line that has, I think, three different models, and they're stout. These are ones that are not going to blow off at your deck. I mean, these are good, hard, solid units that are insulated. And of course we have all the old existing models as mm-hmm. well that have always been true and that worked great. Not to mention full selection of pellets, your seasonings, your rubs, and then, you know, sometimes these rainy days or weekends is good for, you know, maybe doing some dehydrating, get that the elk and deer meat that you have in the freezer and get it thawed out and do some jerky with, you use some of those LEM products, whether it's a slicer or a dehydrator. Make the best of these weekends.
You know, one thing that I noticed walking through the store here was, you know, you have a full supply of all the processing stuff. So if you get it now, you won't have to worry about it when it comes fall time and hunting time.
Well, and we have our year supply in right now. With all these tariffs and that type of stuff, we opted to take that product early so that we weren't seeing the increase on what they were potentially going to be throwing at us. So we have that product in stock, and there's a lot to choose from. We've got a lot of people that are putting stuff on layaway because they know they want a $400 or $500, you know, 1 horsepower grinder, and they're planning ahead. So,
well, I noticed that, you know, with when it comes to the grills or it comes to the processors, you have the two different price points on, mm-hmm. on a lot of these. You know, for the guys that can't afford the $500 for a grinder, you have that smaller, cheaper.
Oh, absolutely. Option. We can get you into a, you know, a $30, $40, $50 hand grinder.
Yeah,
or
right.
even a, yeah. You know, an electric grinder for, you know, under $150.
So get in here and check all this out. You don't think about that stuff, you know, until hunting season. But again, we talk a lot on this show about planning ahead, mm-hmm. and, you know, coming in and getting yourself hooked up there is always a good option. And, you know, I was looking through your gun safes too, and you guys got a great selection. Again, price points are at different levels there too.
Yeah, the you know, we carry the safes, and we also just carry the gun cabinet. So if you're just looking for some security, keep the kids out of them, you know, you can get into a good just cabinet, you know, for $100 and some bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking for something nice, maybe it's going to go in the living room. Maybe it's going to, you need something with good fire rating and heavier protection. We've got a good line of Browning safes in right now, and there's some cool ones. There's a new Yellowstone edition, you know, I mean, got some different features to them. But yeah, then now's the time to be looking at that and gearing up for the summer.
I can remember when I was a kid and if someone had a big gun safe, it was something that, you know, could hold down Fort Knox.
Right.
And like they have really, technology has come to these safes. I mean, they got the push pad locks, they've got the lights that come on and...
Well, and we can special order any safe a guy wants, especially on that Browning or Pro Steel website. So if you want to customize the front of that safe and you want it to have an elk scene or a deer scene or, you know, just scrolling or whatever, we can special order those safes for you. We can even schedule them to be drop shipped right to your house. But we also a lot of times like to bring them in here and make sure that, you know, the shipping was good on them. And then we use a local guy here in town that delivers them to homes and does a fantastic job. Never had a single complaint. But he does a great job of getting them coming to your house, figuring out where you want them, whether or not the safe's mm-hmm. going to fit there, whether the floor can support it,
right.
and all that kind of stuff. And he'll get you a price up front. You know what you're going to get. And, yeah, the safes, I mean, it's a good time to get one.
That would be something I would do is, well, not really think that through as much. And like, I don't think it's going to fit there. And then you're kind of in trouble.
I guess it'll go in the garage.
Yeah. And the wife's like, oh, too bad. So sad.
Yeah.
We also talked about rain gear earlier, but, you know, you got your boots. You want to make sure you take care of those boots because rain, sloppy, muddy, and, you know, you got the everything you can put on the boots.
Well, summertime is a great time to break in those hunting boots. And we talked about, like those Kennetrex out there, and you know, some of those they kind of require like a 50-mile break-in. So, you know, during the summer is the best time to do that. We also carry a lot of the leather conditioners and the silicone sprays to waterproof those boots. So, you know, now's the time, especially, you know, this time of year when we're getting those afternoon showers mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. Get those things broken in, and if you need to get a new pair, now's a good time to get them.
You know, you say a 50-mile break-in period. That seems like a lot of walking, you know. But then you think, you look at your watch, and it's like, oh, I've walked 5 miles today, you
know. You can't shoot them all out of the truck, Drew.
Dang it. Gosh. All right. Well, get in here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Make sure you get everything you need for the long weekend and the long summer ahead.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hey, it's Drew back on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. And, you know, on this show, time to time, I like to dig way back deep in my my past and bring up the good old buddy of mine, Jim Crowley from Jim Crowley Outdoors. And, Jim, I was just thinking the other day that it was 2009 when we did our very first hunting show together.
Yeah, and what we do them for, like 9 years or something?
Oh yeah, yeah, it was nine or ten years, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it was crazy. What a good time, and you know, thank God we're both still good looking.
That's right, and still upright.
Yeah, and still have a face for radio. Yeah.
Well, Jim, I wanted to bring you on because you kind of have a different perspective than anglers here in Wyoming in the West. You're in the Midwest, but you still do a lot of fishing that we do out here. Mm-hmm. And I thought, hey, let's tap the minds of anglers and walleye fishing very big around here. One of the top reservoirs is Glendoe Reservoir, and that's where we just were for our first round of the Wyoming Walleye Stampede. A lot of great fish caught. And a lot of different methods these mm-hmm. days when it comes to fishing for walleye. And sure. And in the first couple of years, it was always jigging a minnow or drop a worm. And now people are going with some of the plastics and different types of baits.
Yeah, they are. And what we were talking about, you know, before we started this morning is I just got done talking with Chase Parsons, who's been a professional walleye angler for years. And his dad, Gary Parsons, and Keith Cavias, are two Hall of Fame walleye anglers. They basically pioneered a lot of the techniques that, you know, walleye anglers are using today. And the plastics have really come into the play for the walleye angler. And so have a lot of other lures, because a lot of walleye anglers, you know, have come to the realization that there are a lot of cases when lures will actually catch you more fish than live bait in certain situations, because you can present the lures in a lot of different ways. You're not always waiting for the fish to come to your live bait. You're using those tools or those lures. I always refer to them as tools because that's what they are. They're tools to get a job done a lot more than they have in the past. Because as much as I don't like the word versatile, because I think it's way overused, mm-hmm. lures are so much more versatile to be able to catch walleyes, whether it be swim baits, whether one of my favorite ones is a jig and wrap, which the Linders brought to the surface years ago, which was an old ice fishing lure. And when I go, especially when I go to Canada, that's just one of those lures. It's like the American Express card for walleyes. You don't leave home without it. It's a jig and wrap is just going to catch you fish. And 9 times out of 10, when it's a reaction bite, and you only have two reasons that fish hit a lure. One is because they're hungry, or two, because they react to something. And walleyes are known to be somewhat of a finicky fish at times. And a jig and wrap just, for whatever reason, really triggers that walleye to react to that bait. And, you know, I've had a couple circumstances over the past year where watching guys fishing live bait around me and just knocking the heck out of walleyes on a jig and wrap or on a swim bait when they're sitting there with that jig and minnow. And you've known me long enough, dude. I don't have the patience for that. I would rather watch paint dry than do a jig and minnow straight down like this. Oh, it just drives me. When I have to do it, I do it, but it's not my preferred way to fish. Right. I want to keep moving, because walleyes are pelagic too. And a lot of times when they're moving, sitting there with that jig and minnow or waiting or going over the same contour line just gets old. And it can be a lot more productive when you cover water with plastics like swim baits or a hard bait like a jig and wrap.
What is your go-to method when you're flipping that the jig and wrap or the
jig and wrap? Yeah. So you've got, I fish it basically two ways. So you can get over them where it's a vertical drop right down on top of them. So I can be using either forward facing sonar in a down mode, or I can be using just traditional 2D sonar, and you're looking for the arcs down there. And what you do is you drop the jig and wrap down there. And for anybody who's used a jig and wrap, it's a size 7 or a size 9. It's a Rapala jig and wrap, old lure. Color doesn't really matter. Because they actually react more to the lure. And so I always tell people, when you're not sure, just pick whatever your confidence color is and learn to fish it. And so I'm fishing it mostly on 12 to 14 pound mono. And then I am going to put a swivel about 18 inches up from the leader. Okay. Because the jig and wrap has a tendency to dart. and dive. And if you don't have that little black, what I use is a little black swivel up there. If you don't have that, you'll twist your line. And once that bait starts doing this, you're not getting bit.
Right. And then it's,
so that swivel needs to be able to give that line and that bait freedom of movement to just do that darting. And I'm ripping it up and I'm watching the slack on the way down, ripping it up and letting the slack. And as I watch that slack, a lot of if that slack starts piling up on the water, you reel down and set the hook. A lot of times you'll go to set the hook again. The fish has already got it. It's just a reaction strike. And so the other way to do it is to cast out. Obviously, if there's a lot of rocks out there, it's this is not one of the I like transitions like weeds to sand, like rock to sand. And those transitions that those walleyes will follow a lot of times. That's what I want. Sparse rocks is fine when they're over boulders and stuff. There's other techniques to do. But when I'm throwing or just pitching it out this way, what I'm doing is then ripping it up at an angle and letting it fall, ripping it up at an angle. Then the bait is coming up and falling, coming up, falling a different way. And so it's always gliding down quickly a different way. And that's how to work that jig and wrap. And it is absolutely deadly on walleyes. And, you know, when there's a lot of rock down there, then what I'll do is I'll use like a swim bait with maybe like a 3/8 or 1/2 ounce jig head on it. And I'm doing the same thing. I'm ripping it and letting that swim bait go down. It'll come through the rocks a lot better. A big hair jig is another one. But when I don't have a lot of cover on the bottom that I'm fishing, I'm definitely using that jig and wrap.
So you obviously had talked about a couple of different options. How long are you going to fish with that jig and wrap? Maybe not get anything until you switch it up.
It's going to be a while because it's very, if I can get them on that jig and wrap bite, which happens a lot, it's very hard to switch from that bait. I'll give you an example. We were in Manitoba last year, and first time we were on this lake called Q Lake, and we went out on this reef, and there's 9 other walleye boats out there. I mean, every single one of them is doing the same thing with jig and minnow, right? And the guide we're with is a buddy of mine. I think you remember me talking about him, Jerry Dunlop from Dunlop's Lodge and Outpost. This is his other lodge, anyway, Q Lake Lodge. And so he's got forward-facing sonar, and he's got 2D, and he's looking straight down. He goes, hey, there's a pot of walleye. You can see him, 5-6 down, just sitting there. He drops the jig and minnow down there. Honest to God truth, one walleye came up and looked right at it and sat there and just looked at it.
Like, what is that?
And I'm just like, it's going to be a long day. And I dropped that jig and wrap down there, and I ripped it up, and I'm not looking at the forward-facing sonar. And Jerry goes, 2 of them just moved that way. I ripped it up again. 4 of them went, and before it hit the bottom, 1 of them hit it. Within the next hour and a half, we filmed the entire walleye show with walleyes up to 27.5 inches long.
Wow.
Well, there were 9 other boats getting, and every walleye fisherman where you are knows what I'm talking about. You start catching walleyes, every boat, it gets to be like a community. Yeah. And I'm basically like, does anybody want to come in a boat with me? That's how close they were. And it was because they were all doing the same thing. And we were able to watch the mood of the fish. And you don't need, although forward-facing sonar helps for that, you could see it on 2D. They weren't reacting to the jig and minnow. They were reacting simply to the action of that jig and wrap. When we got back into the lodge that afternoon, honest truth, I had a gentleman come up to me and offer to buy the rod, reel, and a jig and wrap. I go, dude, this is my first day here. I'm not selling my equipment. Talk to me on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, but it's such a deadly technique. You know, you started the question by asking like plastics, and swim baits usually anywhere from 2.8 to about, you know, 5-6 inches, depending on what kind of walleyes are in the system and depending on what time of year, that just easily it's a cast out, reel in. It can be a cast out, jig up, let it fall. But plastics are another one that, especially swim baits, and you can pick your brand, that walleyes can really, really be attracted to. Another great thing is jerk baits for them. There's so many lure categories out there right now that professional walleye anglers and professional anglers have taught us that can be so much more successful for walleyes, that if you're just using live bait, you are literally missing 50 to 60, maybe 70% of what's available right now for you to catch more fish.
Which, you know, obviously it's interesting because everybody has their set ways, right? Yeah. If you never put a plastic in the water, you never know if they work. And And, right. You know, that was one of the things last year that we, you know, talked with a lot of anglers about. Hey, are the leeches working today or are the worms working today? And they're like, I don't know. I don't use that. So it's like, Well, how you going to know if they work if you don't use it? You know?
Yeah. And so, you know, their repertoire now, walleye anglers, in my opinion, have always been better with electronics. They've always been better than bass anglers with electronics. And that was with 2D. That was with mapping, all that. And, you know, now because of forward facing sonar, you know, bass guys have clued into, hey, you know, electronics really, really have played a bigger part in all this. And walleye anglers are using it too. Crappie anglers are. They're using their electronics a lot more now. And so they're able to see the mood of the fish and actually watching how you can see fish react to certain baits. And I think a lot of anglers, there's a lot more intelligent fishing pressure on the water now than ever before. You know, between high school and college kids, between what you can find, or years ago, you know, you had to, you know, thumb through the magazines and reading stuff and finding out more. Now it's more practical information that you can get like that.
Well, you know, even in the 15, 16 years that we've known each other, I mean, the technology has changed so drastically.
I have brand new Humminbird electronics on my boat, and I got notices for updates already.
Wow.
You know that, and I haven't even had the stuff on the boat 2 months.
Jim, we've been, buddies for 15, 16 years now.
Oh, yeah.
And you've been in the outdoor industry for 30 years plus and doing things. And Slick Fish Radio is your podcast, YouTube platform. Plus, you are all over TV on Plex, right?
Yeah, well, we're on Plex, and we added Sling last year too. So we're on like 11 different streaming stations right now. I think some of them are. Well, I know Sling, Plex, Fubo, Local Now, Distro. There's a bunch of them out there. If you just look up Wired to Fish TV, and then I'm on every day. I'm actually on Wired to Fish TV, the fishing show. Jim Crowell Outdoors is now on 7 days a week.
Wow!
And so. Pacific time, we're on at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, we're on at 4 p.m. And then Slickfish Radio, I think, is on 5 days a week on those. And on top of that, Slickfish Radio is also on Roku, Fire TV, Amazon Music, iTunes, and Spotify. So it can be really, really easy to get sick of me really, really quickly.
You know, you can get to all of those just by going to JimCrowleyOutdoors.com. And Jim, I always love the information that you give out. You're always knowledgeable. And the best part is you've done it. You know, you're not just making stuff up. You've done it.
Yeah, I've fallen down and scraped my knees a bunch of times, man. And hopefully the information, and that's what I've always loved. I don't care if people agree with me or disagree with me. I just care that they catch more fish.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the whole key to this. So, you know, I always enjoy talking to you. We've had so much fun over the years together, and I'm proud to call you a friend and so glad to have you. Your audience is very lucky to have you where you're at. As far as I'm concerned, you're one of the best in the business at what you do. I love you, my friend. God bless you.
Awesome. Jim Crowley, go to JimCrowleyOutdoors.com.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.